Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to Android Faithful, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps in the wide, beautiful world of Android. Dancing to the theme song as always, I'm Huynh Thuyet Dao.
I think I'm the next in order. I'm Chase Dao.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Michelle Rahman.
We didn't talk about that part in the pre-show, like what the order was.
We're just rolling.
I just knew I went first, yeah. So that was easy for me.
Welcome back.
Everybody. We are
back.
Yeah.
Good to be back another week.
We're jammed too. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm looking through this rundown, just a little behind the scenes. We've got some organizational stuff that we're working on around the show in the, behind closed doors, also known as Trello. and you know, it's been an interesting system because we're able to just like throw all the stuff in there throughout the week. And I'm looking at a rundown now, and it is packed. I'm wondering if
it's like a wall.
Like, it feels more packed than normal, but maybe the stories are grouped together.
We're in that, like, post CES, pre Mobile World Congress, like lots of leaks, lots of rumors, right? Lots of stuff swirling kind of in the world. But also, like, nothing major and like earth shattering, right? I mean, I guess presumably the entire tech world is obsessed with the dumb things on people's faces while they're driving their Teslas, but from across the street. But we won't talk about that.
How
everybody seems
show.
To have forgotten about Google Glass and all the jokes they made at our expense.
I mean, really, like, a lot of the same people who are rah-rah were once like, ew, right? It's the same people, right?
Exactly.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm sure there's no, you know, nobody, if you go back to their Twitter 10 years ago, they weren't making fun of glass holes or anything like that, right? Yeah. While they're wearing their ski goggles.
Yes.
I'm just curious. Exactly. I know this is Android Faithful, but are any of you actually interested or going to go try out the Vision Pro?
I'd like to try it
100%.
Out.
Oh, I totally want to try it.
Okay. I would totally try it.
I might try it out this weekend and I'll report back.
Yeah, please do. No, yeah. Cool. I just haven't had the inclination to go to an Apple store to try it you know, and I also think anybody spending $3,500 on that thing is just like, geez. But
that's a lot of dough to drop on anything.
But I definitely want to try it. I mean, Michelle, you've been on the show recently. We've been talking about the Infinite Canvas and like the XR displays and things like that. So I want to see what they're doing with it. I definitely want to try it. I'm not going to buy one though. So yeah.
Especially because the integration with Android devices like non-existent.
Shocking.
There's our Android spin on the Apple Face computer.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Oh, man. All right. Well, before we get started, we want to thank everybody in the last week who's gone over to patreon.com/AndroidFaithful and showed your support. I know I was sleep deprived last week and got a little wacky talking about it, but a bunch of you did pull the trigger and sign up. So I want to thank you all and remind you that you can sign up at Patreon. You can get an ad-free version of the audio of this podcast, no ads in your feed. You get access to our exclusive Discord. And if you sign up at $20 a month, you get a t-shirt, which a bunch of people I get little notices when they're shipping out. And so people like the gear. So we appreciate everybody's support for the show. So head over to.
And you get shout outs and you get exclusive content, and which is totally applicable today.
And you get, that's true. That's a good point. You get to vote on on stuff that we talk about later in the show. We're going to do the patron news pick. And this week you're getting some patron bonus content because not to bury the lead. I don't know what I'm getting a cold. But later in the show, we have an awesome interview with someone from Asus about the ROG Phone 8. And we had to cut it down for time this week because we can't fit the whole thing because it was such a great conversation. But if you're on Patreon, you can watch the whole dang interview. It's like 25 minutes of video is going to be up there on Patreon right after the show tonight. So check that out.
Oh, yeah. Check it out.
Yeah.
Exclusive.
All right.
All right. Well, should we get to all of this news that Michal wrote this week?
So much.
Why don't we just start with you, Michal, Mr. Breaking News All Over the Place?
Sure, why not? I mean, it is that time of the year. We're in February, and if you remember, last February is when Google released the first developer preview of Android 14, and then the year before that, I think it was also February. So, you know, it could be upon us any moment now. Google could be releasing Android 15 Developer Preview 1 this week or next week. Who knows?
Too soon. Too soon.
Too soon, yeah. So because of the way like Android development works, there's also simultaneously this QPR beta program that's ongoing. And a lot of those features that you see in these QPR releases are actually in development for Android 15 rather than the QPR releases, because Google tends to hold off on a lot of major features for the next release instead of like the minor releases, which makes sense. So while digging through these QPR beta releases, I found potentially three somewhat major changes that could be coming in Android 15. The first one is this feature that allows you to share media audio to nearby devices. So those of you who are familiar with the new Bluetooth LE Audio standard that was announced a couple of years ago, Google has been working on adding support for that into Android since Android 13. But there's also this newer feature that the Bluetooth special interest group announced that built on top of LE Audio. It's called AuraCast. And this is basically a one-to-many broadcast feature that allows you to basically have one source device send out like a signal to any Bluetooth LE Audio device nearby. And you're basically broadcasting your audio to many, many devices, not just like one device, but two devices. You can have 3, 4, 5, many, many devices connected to a single broadcast source. And Google is preparing to add support for this feature, or better support for this feature in Android 15 by adding a dedicated page and settings to connect to and also start an audio stream from your device. Right now, Bluetooth LE Audio, I think, is not fully enabled on the Pixel series. I think Google's probably waiting until potentially they release a pair of Bluetooth LE Audio enabled Pixel Buds. We don't have any details on that, if that's ever happening. But it looks like Google's gearing up to make LE Audio and AuraCast a more prominent feature in Android 15.
Nice.
And then another change that they're looking to do is related to making apps take up more of your available screen space. So for a long time, apps have had the option to fill up your entire screen if they wanted to. So like you have your status bar at the top and your navigation bar at the bottom, and it's up to apps whether or not they want to draw content underneath those bars. And there's a reason like Google hasn't enforced this on app developers, and it's because you have to take some special consideration into account, because you might have some overlap between the navigation bar and a certain button. So like developers have ways to work around that, of course, but that's kind of the reason why it hasn't been forced onto apps at the moment. But it looks like that might be changing in the future, because I spotted this compatibility change in the QPR beta that says that Google wants to enforce edge-to-edge mode on applications that target Android 15 or later, right now, that compatibility mode isn't enabled on apps that target Android 15. But if Google were to choose to enable this, then it's possible that, you know, this is something that Google could be forcing on developers down the road. And I see Wynn is like wincing right now. I really this particular change.
Sorry, I was muted. I don't like it. And I can't, it's hard to go into details on why I don't like it. And I think, very recently my current job, I had to do some work with like full screen and it's difficult because, number one, yeah, traditionally when you have content that draws behind the bars, behind the status bar, behind the navigation bar, there's like usually a reason. Usually it's because it's media, right? Or, you know, you want an immersive experience. And I just don't think every app needs to be an immersive experience. And the problem is if you don't handle those situations correctly, you might have important parts of the screen that you don't anticipate as, or your designer might anticipate, like, you know, being occluded by these like UI elements. So it's weird because I feel like ever since immersive mode came into being, it's been a thing that Google has been really pushing on us. But it's just one of those things that I think a lot of developers don't find the need for. And so they don't, you know, take it into account because it's as of right now, it's optional. And it's not really, again, it depends on what your app is. Like if I'm like a bank app, do I need to be in immersive mode? No. But if I'm a media app.
Immersive bank app.
Right. You really got to see your whole statement just wrap around, buddy. And so that's kind of like my thing is like, I just think I get why they're doing it because in general, the APIs around immersive mode are extremely confusing and extremely hard to deal with. So that also discourages people from doing that. So I think for, you know, in this like, you know, 2024 of like, you know, wraparounds where everybody's flagship phones are like wraparound screens and all kinds of crap like that, this kind of enhances those experiences. But why now I'm going to have to worry about bugs coming in where, oh, this button's under like the dang bar. And I'm like, yeah, it wasn't under the dang bar like two versions ago.
But is it,
I don't like
it. Is it a step towards consistency?
No.
No?
No. I guess yes, in that it'll force developers to do it, but I just don't see
it. It's a step toward consistency in the wrong direction, it sounds like.
In the wrong direction. Yeah. I don't see it. But yes, when Google breaks our stuff, we have to fix it. So in that case, yes.
Yeah.
I just don't like it.
Wild. Well, if this is any indication, wild. Android 15 is going to be a roller coaster, everybody, so buckle up.
Well, in more positive news, there's one feature that I think you probably don't have an objection to. It's the support for built-in app archiving. So if you're familiar, I think earlier last year, Google Play rolled out an automatic app archiving feature that takes effect if you're low on storage. Google Play will basically swap the app with a stripped-down version of the APK that retains your data, but basically heavily reduces the size of the application installed on your device so that you don't have to fully uninstall it and then reinstall it later on and then sign into your app all over again. You can just archive it, come back to it when you actually need it. And the only issue with the way it was implemented before was that it was only part of the Google Play Store itself. It was not built into the OS. You couldn't go into the settings on your phone and then archive the app from there. You had to do it from Google Play, and you couldn't do it manually. You could only have it automatically apply whenever you're low on storage. But Android 15 looks to be building support for this feature right into the OS so that you can go into settings and manually archive an app if you want to. And also, it looks to be integrating with the existing unused apps feature, which removes some permissions, clears the cache and other stuff after 3 months or more, whenever you haven't used an app for a while. And it looks to be integrating with that so that it'll also archive the app when you haven't used an app for a certain amount of time.
Okay, cool. I like app archiving. Sure.
That I'm okay
That's
with.
That's all I got to say.
That I'm totally okay with.
So far, Android 15 shaping up to be, I don't know. It still feels, I suppose, very early. We're kind of outside of the realm of these big number releases being major, you know, ground shaking things. So it's always these little things, you know, these little tweaks and everything. So
tweakies.
That's the direction we're headed. Not the case for Amazon, though. Amazon likes its ground-shaking news
or
rumors.
Yeah, totally. Like, so I was kind of thinking about this, and my husband and I were talking about this news a little bit. So, you know, like how sometimes you, like, you have a show and it leaves off on a cliffhanger and you are waiting for the next season.
That's the best, the best kind of show there is, if you ask me.
The best kind of show there is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, because you cannot hide anything from the internet anymore, you get like a casting call, like news, and you find out like, oh, that character that died, the actor just came back and did like, you know, several hours of filming. You're like, huh. I wonder if that means something. Well, Amazon kind of did their own little like casting call, kind of like spoiler thing last week, where basically they posted a job listing for Fire TV. And that listing, by the way, is down now, but you can find it via Wayback Machine. But basically, the long and short of it is this job interview basically tipped Amazon's hand that they are moving the Fire TV client away from Android and to native slash Rust slash React Native. So basically through a job posting, I feel like someone did not clear this, but through a job posting, we pretty much have it confirmed that the direction that they're going and that what they're working to is moving away from Android for Fire TV. So yes, this is reportedly the project Vega OS, which we've heard some like, you know, kind of rumors about, but I don't know, it feels kind of substantiated if they're hiring people for it. So
and this and this was basically similar to the stuff that Yanko Rodiger's when we had him on late last year. Yeah. He saw a job listing. It was like that sort of thing that triggered this. So like they've got to get people to work on the stuff, right? So it's
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum to be in, right? If you if you're working for a company and you're trying to do anything under, you know, behind the scenes, you know, in secret, and yet you still have the need to hire the people with the right experience, and so you need to put the word out in a way that doesn't entirely, you know, lift the veil.
It, and you need to be specific about what kind of people you need, right?
Right, so exactly.
You can't get away from it. And also, it, I assume it's harder to hire if you're not like a little bit transparent about the work you're doing.
I mean, they were completely transparent.
Yeah, very much.
They want to hire someone that, quote, implement and deliver features on the Fire TV client code base as it transitions from FOS, Fire OS slash Android to native Rust and React Native. Like,
well, I think they would have been fine if they didn't say as we transition from.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that would have been okay.
As we secretly transition from. They forgot to put the word secret in there, and then we would have all ignored it.
I just imagine like someone in marketing, like, you know, got an email about this, and then they went over to engineering, like, hey, y'all, just wait a second. Just
who posted that thing? Bill? Did you post this?
It's like, yeah, you told us we need people. Yeah.
It's always Carol in HR. It's always Carol in HR.
Carol.
So. Look, Carol deserves a break, okay? Carol is overloaded.
Yeah.
Let's take it easy on Carol.
When I posted about this news, someone brought up a good point that that the job listing only mentions Fire TV transitioning away. It doesn't confirm that Fire OS in general is going away. So, it's hard for me to imagine Amazon ditching Android entirely, especially for its tablets, because like if they were to develop an entirely new operating system just for their tablets, they would lose out on so many applications that are available on Android right now for the Fire tablets. But doing it for their TVs makes more sense because there's not that many applications that you need to have ported over to a TV, and Amazon has enough market share to get the dozens of developers to port their applications over.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yep.
Maybe it is just the TV.
We'll see. We know something's coming. I mean, honestly, like one of the things that got kind of swept under the rug coming out of CES was I was expecting a big showing from Amazon in the TV space during CES that didn't happen. Right. And so I know, you know, Yanko had us, you know, kind of, I subscribe to like 2024 is going to be big for Amazon and TV. And I'm still waiting for that to come to fruition, I guess. So
this is it, though.
Yeah. It's just jobless.
This is why it's big, because they're going to, you know, maybe not. I don't know. You know what's going to be big in 2024? Circle to Search. Seems like every week now we're talking about this in some way, shape, or form. Why are we talking about it this week? Because it officially launched for Pixel devices. You could already kind of get it on the new Samsung devices. And now the Pixel 8 and the Pixel 8 Pro got their little secret updates, their silent updates that enables Circle to Search. I've used it a couple of times, and I got to say it did exactly what I needed it to do. I was watching a video. I was on Facebook Marketplace and someone was selling a boom mic that I'm considering buying, but he was also selling it with this other, like this, like stand for it that looked like it didn't ship with the mic, but it had no information as far as what the stand was. And so I used Circle to search and it identified the stand. Like
beautiful.
It was able to figure it out. So cool. It was awesome. It's like, oh, wow, that was kind of magical. But Michelle, you wrote about this. You said that it can do some things that we weren't shown in advance that it could do. What are those things?
Well, it's just a nifty way to enhance the way you use Circle to search. So if you try to search something that's hidden behind the search bar, if you didn't know, you can actually fling the search bar to the other side of the screen. You can move it from the bottom to the top to get it out of the way. And also, if you're trying to search something that's like really small, you can actually take two fingers and pinch in and zoom or zoom out, because it's literally taking a screenshot that you can actually right. just pan around.
That's handy.
This is why they want 100% full screen on all apps, y'all, so they can just so people can just fling around the screen search bar.
I mean, you say that jokingly, but like right?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of thinking that's like serious. There, it's like a long term. Like, hey, this will work for these super integrated, highly immersive features that we want to do. But that's being said, I'm not criticizing Circle to Search at all. I think actually Circle to Search is probably the most interesting. And kind of like it, you know, there's very few things these days that surprise us with like mobile phones, and it trying to find a feature that is both simple, easy to access, is not too hard to teach like any range of like smartphone users, and that's actually useful is
delivers on its promise.
It's really hard to find in 2024. Yeah. And dang, y'all, I think they kind of hit it in the park with just something like Circle to Search. It's simple, but it works.
And it's innovative. Well, and it's a new interface, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting about it is, as we have talked on previous episodes, it's not like this functionality didn't exist before.
Exactly.
Like, we could do it before, but there's something about narrowing in such an approachable way, you know, like if I had an image on my phone, I could do a lens capture of this and say, you know, I want this, but if there are other things on the screen, there were ways for it to get confused and everything like that. With circle to search, it's basically the same thing, except you're saying crop out everything outside of this area.
Zero in on it.
And the fact that you can do it with your finger and you don't have to like draw a crop window, you know, like grab the brackets and everything. You just kind of scribble it. And so it makes it approachable and it works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great feature. It's a great extension of a feature.
Thank God Samsung gave it to us.
Thank you, Samsung, for everything that we have on Android. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. I feel like we need a graphic or a bumper about Find My Device. Like, we need some sort of like, or a sign. It has been X number of days since we've checked in on Find My Device. Michelle, what's the latest on that?
So basically, the latest is that we're still waiting. We still have to wait. And the reason is because Google and Apple are both waiting on each other before they can roll out respectively their features. So Google is waiting on Apple to roll out unwanted tracker detection on iOS. And Apple is waiting on this specification for unwanted tracker detection to be finalized and published by the standards body that handles these certifications, you know, on the web. And they're working with many other companies to do so. And basically, one of the directors who is like managing this mailing list for this specification announced over the weekend, or I think it was on Friday they announced it, that they closed the call for feedback and they're going to conduct a review of the charter at their next meeting. And then they're going to send this charter to the community for more review. Then they're going to do another final review on the charter. And then if all that goes well, the absolute earliest that the specification can be put into the next charter would be March 16th. And if this sounds really bureaucratic, that's because it is. That's because there's a lot of companies involved. There's a lot of processes that need to be followed. There's a lot of I's that need to be dotted and T's that need to be crossed before you can get a standard into this online standards body. And unfortunately, that means Android fans, you have to wait for the rollout of the Find My Device network, because Google has already committed to not rolling that out until Apple rolls out unwanted tracker detection on iOS. And Apple is waiting until this specification is finalized before they roll it out. And even when the specification is finalized, we don't know if Apple is already like has an implementation ready or if they're going to begin development on it. Like, we don't know what that timeline is going to be. So it could be maybe April when all this starts rolling out, or it could be the end of this year. Like, we have honestly no idea.
Or and it could be never. I'm just saying.
Sure seems like it.
In a sea of possibilities, it's not a 0% chance of happening.
Yeah.
But I hope it happens. Okay. So
I think it'll happen at some point. Right? I mean, they're putting too much work into it. But Michelle, I just don't know if it's going to happen as fast as you want it to.
I'm about to start finding a castle balcony. Y'all start singing "Someday My Prince Will Come" or "Someday My Find My Network Will My Device Will Come." Y'all,
it's the new OnePlus marketing. Right. Well, cool. Well, to round out the news, like we mentioned at the top of the show, if you are a supporter of us over our Patreon at patreon.com/AndroidFaithful, you can help us pick what we're talking about tonight. Every week on Monday, we offer up three stories that we're considering to include in the show and let the patrons vote on it. This week, I got to tell you, everybody, very disappointed in you, very disappointed in the way this one went, because we had three very compelling stories to discuss. And I need to see them. So if we can do that, great. So the story that I was rooting for came in last, everybody. And that was the phone maker behind Cat and Motorola's rugged lineups has shut down. Only 13% of our patrons were interested in rugged phones, which was heartbreaking to me.
Rugged phones just aren't what they used to be, Ron.
Exactly.
They used to be all the rage, and now they're not.
Exactly. 30% of you voted for Google Photos set to get a new My Week feature, thanks to an APK teardown. But the winning story that we're about to discuss right now is the fact that Chromecast with Google TV is now serving full screen auto playing ads, with 56% of you wanting to discuss that. So what's the deal here? Basically, autoplaying ads have started being served to Chromecast with Google TV home screens. The ad that was noticed was an ad for chicken tender wraps from Carl's Jr., which I don't have Carl's Jr.'s here in New York, so I probably didn't see this. That was very probably regionally targeted. Prior to this, any ads were usually limited to digital content. And of course, now people aren't happy with the product placement. So I guess the question is, how do you like them chicken wraps?
I'm so like hungry right tenders? Now.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of liking it right now. I'm looking at this and I'm good. Like, I'll take that.
I don't have any Carl's Jr.'s around here either. So just,
I mean, it's probably gross, but it looks good.
I mean, let me ask you, okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I'm going to we'll do a little bit. I'm feeling a little salty. I have my Google TV, Chromecast with Google, whatever the hell it's called, you know, whatever. I see sponsored content in that rotation in the form of media suggestions all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So what is the difference between a Disney Plus or a HBO Max or whomever buying that slot to promote something you can watch on it with Carl's Jr. buying that slot to show you about chicken tenders? Right. And now I know the answer is, at least they're promoting content that I can watch with that device versus it's just a commercial for chicken tenders. But Google's whole revenue is based off ads. Like, why is this a surprise?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't think it's a surprise, as more of just annoying, because a lot of people, when they want to turn on their TV, they want to just quickly get to the app they want to launch to watch whatever they want to watch, right? And like these full screen ads, you got to like press the button down to go down and then like readjust your muscle memory, basically, or your like your memory of where to go for launching your content.
Hold on. Stop talking, really, Michelle. This looks really, just stop talking. This looks really delicious.
Well, hang on a second. They're two for $6. Nobody told me that.
I'm starving.
I don't know why we're podcasting right now. I just need to go get these and dip them in that sauce.
Because the ad is showing just in the rotation of it. So if I go down, if I click down again, I just will stop the ad from running, right? It's not like non-skippable, right?
I honestly have no problem with this. I mean, I'm someone who is generally annoyed at the amount of streaming services anyway, and how that whole other segment of the industry. Yeah. Although that whole other segment of the industry wants my money. If it's like a non-obtrusive, easily, you know, bypassable ad, I'm equally annoyed by all these things, and it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, I can go and watch my YouTube with that. And you're right, Ron. I mean, to be fair, stuff costs money. I mean, capitalist, whatever, yada aside, it is Google's business. Can't be surprised. Yep. So I do like
the irony of this, as this is the people paying us money have chosen us to talk about Google making money by showing it. This is a real snake eating its own tail kind of thing.
Yeah.
Here's a pro tip.
Right,
yeah. What's that?
If you care, if you don't like all the ads that are being put in the launcher, surprisingly, Android TV still lets you uninstall the stock launcher and replace it with a third-party one. So you can totally liberate yourself from that. True. And just have a row of apps that you want to launch. That's what I do on my Shield TV. Yeah. There are no ads or anything. It's just a row of apps that I launch.
All right. Free yourself from the chicken wraps.
Go ahead.
There's a pro tip. There you go. Pro tip from Michelle right there. You don't need to be on Twitter for it. You just tune into the show.
Yeah. And I mean, on the flip side, we have people watching our live feed right now that are willing to throw us $5, yeah. €5.99 euros, $2, and they aren't getting a chicken wrap at the end of it.
True, good point. Well, keep in point, though, Jason, that no one watching the Carl's Jr. ad got a chicken wrap at the end of it. No. They were just alerted to the fact
that... I don't know. I think after that ad was done,
$2 for $6.
A certain percentage...
And by the way...
Got a chicken wrap.
If you're listening to the show as a podcast, you're missing out the live experience because the chat room is talking about food and Roy Rogers came up, and now I really want a fried chicken and biscuit
from Roy Rogers.
Because
right
there's
now.
Nothing like okay. stopping at Roy Rogers on the New Jersey Turnpike at a rest stop and getting fried chicken. And
yes, that was yes, Ron. Every road trip to New York City from Maryland, there was a Molly Pitcher rest stop.
Yeah. in Jersey.
Roy Rogers, and it's like the only Roy Rogers left that we could get to. So
it used to be one at Penn Station in the Amtrak section. So I used to when I'd take the train into the city, I'd go off to Amtrak, get some Roy Rogers, and go off to CBGB's or wherever I was going. That's long gone. So now it's just the New Jersey Turnpike. Anyway, ads in Chromecast. I've yet to see one. I use my Google TV with Chromecast every day. My kids use it. I am seeing sponsored content, but it's media based. I haven't seen just blatant ads, so I'm going to be on the lookout for it and just see. As long as it's not uninterruptible, I'm okay with it. The moment it becomes I have to watch this ad to get to the content, F you, I'm out. You know, like
right? Yeah, that is I think
that's a bridge too far. So, before we move on, I just want to thank three of our patrons for helping bring the support to the show. Joe Furness and David Formeski and Kirk Corliss. You guys are awesome. You guys have been supporting us from the beginning, way back during the summer. Thank you so much for your support, Joe, David, and Kirk. Without you and without all the other patrons on Patreon, you make the show happen. So we really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Cool. So with that, let's get to the main event, right, Jason?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
All right, let's get into the main event. It is time. We are in the hardware block right now. And before we get into any hardware news, we thought we'd give you a hardware interview. We're actually yesterday, had a chance to chat with Shihao Kung from ASUS about the ROG or the ROG. There's a few different ways in this interview where we could have, you know, said the company name wrong, said the phone name wrong. I think we got it right for the most part, but I just got it wrong. The ROG 8 phone and about gaming phones in general. So we're going to go ahead and play a piece of this interview for you right now. Here you go. All right. We are super excited to talk about a phone with someone who knows a lot about the phone that has come up very frequently on the past episodes of Android Faithful. We have with us Shihao Kung, who is the Global Technical PR and EMEA Territory Marketing Manager for smartphones at ASUS. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, and probably a pretty exciting time right now with the release of the ROG Phone 8, and we're excited to kind of dive into this with you. I think primarily just right off the top, you know, I think that the story from the outside appears to be, because we followed, I mean, you know, with Android Faithful and then with All About Android prior to it, we've followed the kind of journey of the ROG phone over the years and this idea, this like emerging idea of like a phone that is specifically tied to being a high performance a device for gaming. And ROG phone has always been right at the top of that that wave. And with the 8, seems like the story is changing. Not that it's not a good gaming phone. It's still a great gaming phone, it seems like. But it's also becoming more of like a mainstream offering. And so I guess I'm curious to start off with, tell us a little bit about the story of this device. Why the story is a little different this time around?
Right. I think, well, this year we launched the ROG Phone 8, right? So it's our seventh phone. We skipped over the number 4 due to, how should I say, superstition in the Chinese culture. So this is our seventh device. And you could say that for the first 6 of them, they followed a very tight formula. Very similar. Of course, there are changes and additions. They've evolved over time, but more or less following that same foundation that we set back with the first ROG phone. And we're looking at this type of cadence, you know, every 3 years or 2 years, 4 years, we tend to do some changes. This time, I would say, or I think a lot of people out there see that we've made our biggest change, right? So what are some of the reasons? I think when we look at device categories, so not specifically smartphones, but if you look at categories within smartphones or, you know, device, look at laptops as a big device category, and then you have these subcategories within. With, you know, with smartphones, gaming, the notion of gaming smartphones really began back when we released ROG Phone 1. I think there was us and maybe one other brand at that time, and then more and more entrants. You know, in the first years they are more exploratory. We try to define, of course, we define what a gaming smartphone is from our vision, obviously, and then the market will respond to that, and we iterate, we collectively, the industry tries to figure out what features work really well and what features might just be temporary in a sense. So that evolved and moves over time. Android gaming, one could say that mobile gaming, that speed of demanding power is slows down a bit. I think we will see a increase again with the advent of ray tracing. We might see a big leap in demand of performance, but I would say now we're kind of at the tail end of pushing really powerful devices to run games, right? I don't know if you remember back when PUBG came out, PUBG Mobile, you know, running 30 FPS, 45, and then, you know, up to 90, and most devices couldn't do that. And nowadays, even the new games, you can run them quite okay with a, let's say, a regular top-tier phone. So, and over these years, we've also figured out what our users want, because in the end, when we do ROG phone the way we have done, it can be extremely polarizing for some people. I mean, some people love it, and some people will say this is not for me, right? And to kind of go extremely hardcore into a certain aspect is something that we've deliberately made, you know, let's say foregoing certain everyday usability features to drive that cutting edge performance first, hardcore performance first. In a way, I'm not familiar if you cover like laptops and follow the gaming development in that space back when gaming laptops were new, because I've been doing gaming laptops for years as well. You know, the designs, they were wild. They were crazy. I remember maybe five, lots 6 years back. Exactly. Yeah. we even put water cooling inside, you know, a gaming laptop. You had like the first high refresh rate gaming laptops. They were 3D displays. That was actually the first time it wasn't used for high refresh rate, because that was not a thing. But to do 3D, we had to do 60 plus 60. So they were actually 120 hertz displays. So, and then, yeah, exactly. And now you see this year at CES, we introduced the new ROG Zephyrus. Of course, we've had our ROG Zephyrus line for quite some time, and that is more muted, let's say, more refined, looks more like a regular laptop, but of course has all of that gaming power. So ROG 8 is following similar, where in the beginning we're exploring the category, we're doing a lot of crazy things, pushing the boundaries. And then, of course, as the market grows, as people come in and they want more things from their devices, you know, we see this type of development. And I think it becomes maybe, how should I say? I think the market, or all of you, might put a lot more weight into this change because we only have one phone per year, right? So if we had like a big range, we might see a ROG phone that's very gamery, similar to the past, and then we had maybe we would have a more streamlined, discreet ROG 8, similar to our laptops, where we have the Strix and the Zephyrus lines and the Flow and a lot of different designs. But with the ROG phones, we only have one device per year, so the contrast becomes bigger.
Yeah, and you're probably right. We may have overanalyzed it, because when we first saw the 8, we're like, oh, they're taking more of a step towards the middle, or more step towards the mainstream, from a visual standpoint, which I saw as a potentially good thing, because, you know, like someone like me, I'm not a hardcore gamer, but I like to play games every once in a while, and I want to do it, and I don't necessarily know if I would go the full LED blitzed out experience. So maybe being in the middle is a good spot. I don't know, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it is, of course, intentional that we designed the ROG Phone 8, and especially the 8 Pro, within this type of look. And we've gone for a display or a panel that has a hole punch, right? Instead of having no cutout and just bezel. We wanted to combine these different things that we're looking at. You know, in the past, the ROG, if we look at ROG Phone 7, it is very large. It's a large, large phone for many reasons. One of them, of course, being that we have bezels, we have front-facing speakers, so they are more uncomfortable to hold. They're more comfortable to hold maybe from a gaming perspective, but less so from a smartphone perspective. So it's always this battle between these two directions in a way, right? Because every year we've been quite clear that the ROG Phone series, it is not a handheld console. It's not a game console. It is a smartphone. So we need to keep in mind these smartphone features. And if we put, you know, the line in the middle, 50-50, in the past, I would say maybe we've gone 90% towards gaming. This year, we're probably not as much. Maybe we're 70% towards gaming, but we're still far away from the 50% line. Whereas the regular smartphones, they might be on the other end, 100%, 80%, 90%, or whatever that may be. So we're still in the realm of it's a gaming smartphone. So if there was any questions about that, you know, in our own minds, this is a gaming smartphone. And it really shows when you start using the device and looking at the things there, that it is not a regular smartphone.
So I kind of want to follow up on that Spectrum point that you brought up just now. Like the ROG Phone 8 has maybe a 70-30 split between gaming and regular smartphone, or maybe even 60-40. It used to be in the past that regular flagship devices from other brands maybe had 100% of regular smartphone features and 0% gaming. But now you're kind of seeing a lot of regular devices have some gaming-centric features. Like they have gaming dashboards, gaming modes, performance modes, and all these tools that are available within the software. And also they have some hardware features, you know, vapor chambers and a lot of cooling systems built in. So I'm kind of wondering now, like, is this shift towards the ROG Phone 8 becoming, like, gaining features that would be appealing to those consumers? Is that more out of, like, trending towards the market demand, or is that because of increased competition from regular smartphones? Because I'm seeing a lot of people, at least like some publications, ask, is there a purpose in buying a gaming phone in 2024, considering that regular phones have kind of caught up in terms of performance and software features? Like, is there still a real need for gaming phones? What do you have to say to that?
I think, let's say, my spontaneous answer or my initial answer to this, or very candid answer, is if you're asking the question if a gaming smartphone is needed, then a gaming smartphone is not for you, right? Hmm. And you know that the type of user that we have looking for gaming smartphones or looking for the ROG Phone series, they definitely, you know, this question doesn't come up. Like, do I need the ROG phone or maybe one of our competitors? Because if you think about it, we are a very small brand within the smartphone space. We're not, you know, one of the big ones for sure. So all of the users coming to our devices, they're switching over from regular smartphones. So all of our users, 100% of them in the past, have been using regular smartphones. Of course, we've lost users surely along the way. You know, some people use one generation, maybe switch back to another brand and so on. But every year we gain users, and most of them are coming from regular smartphone devices, let's say non-gaming smartphones, because that's what's out there. And we're not seeing any slowdowns in uptake, if I should say that. But of course, answering your question, Michelle, it's more like the regular smartphones, the way I see it is when we're looking at top tier performance or top tier mobile processors, the demand for thermal dissipation goes up every year within the past years. So I'm sure you're very well aware of this. If you look at the Snapdragon series from Qualcomm, Snapdragon 8, you know, from the 8, 45, 55, 65, and then you had the 888, and then all the Plus with Gen 1, which was so-so, and then you had Gen 2 and Gen 3. Actually, the maximum power that these processors require or can pull from the system, it goes up every year. Efficiency goes up, but the maximum power also goes up. So you will see a lot of quote-unquote regular smartphones increasing cooling systems like vapor chambers and graphite sheets and, you know, all of these things that gaming smartphones started first. They're doing it out of a necessity, is my guess. They have to do it because the maximum performance that you are able to take from the processors requires that. But what you will also notice that the priority in performance will be very different from a regular smartphone with a flagship processor versus a gaming smartphone. So we're prioritizing different things. Whereas for ROG Phone, we're prioritizing performance over time, and the ability to control your performance. Whereas, let's say a regular smartphone might prioritize a consistent level of performance, but prioritizing, let's say, heat or stability over time in that those have a sense, or even battery life. So they will be more aggressive in throttling the performance. They will be more aggressive in managing the thermals and these type of things, and they offer usually less control for these type of things. Yeah. So I think definitely gaming smartphones still here. There is still a need for it, there is still a demand from users who want to have more control, more fine grain. For example, the ROG phone, we put the CPU or the processor in the middle of the device, whereas Most brands put it near the top next to the camera. So when you play in landscape mode, that's what most games are played at, your fingers are the furthest away from the heat spot, which means we can drive the performance higher for longer, and you won't feel as much discomfort. And of course, it allows for our cooler attachment that can directly cool that area. So if you really play a lot on smartphones, you will notice that there is still a distinct difference between a regular smartphone and a ROG phone.
Right on. Well, Shi, it's been a pleasure talking with you about this phone, especially considering how much it you know, every year after year, it bubbles up to the surface, and we have, you know, we have a lot of people who are fans of Android. And then, of course, you know, as I'm sure you are aware, there is the microcosm, the smaller kind of group of really passionate Android gamers. And they're the ones that we hear about when we talk about the ROG phone. I am not like a super like devoted mobile gamer, but I respect that there are devices out there. This is like one of the things that I love about the Android ecosystem is that there are manufacturers, makers of devices and hardware like Asus, who are creating hardware that might not appeal to everybody. It might not be perfect for everybody, but it certainly has its audience. And on Android, you can find that kind of specificity. And I just think that's really cool that you all are continuing to kind of double down and see how you can develop this brand even further. So Shi Hao Kung, it was a real pleasure to have the opportunity to talk to you today. Thank you so much for hopping on and telling us all about the ROG Phone 8.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. We'll have you back. We'll have you back again when the 9 comes out or whatever you decide to call it then. Who the heck knows?
Yeah.
Shi Hao Kung, thank you again. All right. Bring everybody back on the stage. And we can look at one final screenshot of our interview in the video version. Okay, we'll remove that now. Cannot hear you, Ron.
Sorry, I was muted while we were listening to the interview. My favorite thing about these sort of conversations is that when we're able to go right to the source, because here we are looking at the ROG Phone 8, and we're like, oh, they're going for the mainstream, and they're not. They're like, no, we're a gaming phone. Like it was, they just went with a little more muted design this time around. But so I appreciate having our conjecture debunked when we can. So
I was really sad because I didn't get to make it. I got sick yesterday, y'all. I'm so sad. I'm extra sad now I couldn't make it. And I think the more that Shi Hao was talking, that makes a lot of sense because I think traditionally the branding around gamer, you know, hardware has been very big and bold. If you were in the chat with us, if you were listening, watching live, you know, I kind of mentioned like Alienware and kind of like these, you know, these big bold statements about, hey, like gamers, we are here for you. And as much as I think as a gamer, I enjoy the aesthetic in theory, I don't necessarily want, you know, want to pay the premium for something wild and crazy. I do, you know, want to, I don't know. I think there's a difference between just like with fashion, like the high fashion concept, conceptual thing, and then the thing you actually wear and take home, there's a bit of difference. So I think listening to Shi Hao, it makes a lot of sense to kind of tone it down and like, you know, and a lot of things he said make a lot of sense. And I just also want to make the point that it's so interesting to hear him talk about performance. And there is a distinction between, you know, when Google talks to us, Android developers about performance, it is a vastly, vastly different kind of performance than what, you know, Asus is aiming for with their phones. And that's just a really great point to make. Yep. And anyway,
I will say on the look of the phone though, I mean, I've gone on the record for many years saying that I want a phone that does not look like everybody else's phone on the subway. Mm-hmm. And the ROG phone always is that. And even this ROG Phone 8, like I like the little cool thing, the little logo thing that lights up, whatever,
it is sexy.
Like those are cool. Like I do think they're cool. I think previous versions have been a little out there, but I still think they're better than the black, you know, candy bar phone design that we've got so bored with. So
indeed. Well, big thanks once again to Asus and for Shi Hao Kung for spending some time talking about the phone. Should also point out, we mentioned it earlier, but if you are a patron, you get the full unedited interview. We had that was basically like half of the interview, and so we've got more information to dive into with Shi Hao about the ROG Phone 8. So patreon.com/AndroidFaithful.
Yep. And big thanks to Michelle for making that connection. Making
yes, indeed.
Thank you, Michelle, for hooking us up.
Thank you, Michelle.
So, yeah, man. Yeah. Awesome. Setting that up.
All right. Now into the rest of our hardware, starting with you, Wynn.
Yeah, so it's really funny because yesterday I booted up my Z Fold 5 for work, and I texted one of you guys. I was like, "Oh, I kind of miss this phone.
Yep.
I might be looking at the Z Fold 6." Well, apart from, you know, when looking for the next Z Fold 6, something that we might be able to anticipate with this new generation of foldables from Samsung is possibly cheaper models. And this is kind of all speculative, but basically from a report by The Elec, which is a news source from run by the Korea Electronics Industry Media, they're reporting that Samsung Display, presumably the portion of Samsung that makes displays, is attempting to try a different method to make the bezels of foldable OLED panels. And so it seems like for a long time, Samsung has been asking the display division to, you know, make, you know, the displays and the bezels themselves cheaper, so that presumably if the cost of manufacturing is cheaper, the end price for users will be cheaper. Well, they're considering a very interesting technology specifically for the device bezels, and that is inkjet printing. Yes, Samsung Display. I actually want to explain this. It's actually pretty cool. But yes, Samsung Display.
Sorry, I have a visceral reaction anytime I hear inkjet.
Yeah. So the whole idea is basically lowering costs. So without going into too much detail, which I don't actually understand anyway, but the way that these bezels are, you know, the bezels of these OLED panels are used to hide, you know, kind of like the guts of, you know, the foldable panels, like the circuits and everything like that. So these bezels are meant to kind of hide, you know, the internals. So what happens is when you have like the kind of the base raw panel that is like the display, those get wrapped in a thin film to protect them from like oxygen, water, and the elements. And then the bezels are, you know, kind of laid over on top of that to actually, you know, hide all the, you know, kind of internals. And then over top of that, you get the glass laminated thing. So, you know, that actually ends up being their full screen. And of course, the infamous screen protector that some people rip off, which you're not supposed to later. So the bezels, you can kind of think of them almost like when you make cookies and you have like a certain amount of dough, right? And like kind of like the challenge is to get as much cookies out of one piece of dough as possible. And so it's kind of like that. Like basically these, you know, there's different processing methods to make the film that they cut the bezels out of. And the current one is called something that it's called MDD, and I forget what the full, you know, expanded acronym is, but you know, it only allows for a certain amount of film, and then they cut out the bezel, and so there's a certain cost associated like per bezel, right? So what the inkjet printing, and I really don't know how the inkjet printing would work, but apparently if they use inkjet printing over the current manufacturing method, they can actually like get basically more bezels out of the, you know, I don't understand, but basically they get more bezels for the more bang for the buck, more bezels for the buck.
More bang for the bezel.
More bang for the bezel. I like it. More bang for the bezel, which means that, you know, for a certain amount of cost, they'll get more bezels out of it, which drives the manufacturing cost down, which ultimately could mean cheaper folds and flips for us. So anyway, it's really cool. You know, it is inkjet printing. I don't know how it works, but yeah, this is all kind of a bit speculative, but it has been that Samsung find cheaper production manufacturing methods to lower prices for us. We'll have to see how that shakes out, but because we don't know yet, but that is a report out of the Korea Electronics Industry Media. I didn't know how bezels worked, and now I know that they're kind of like cut out and we can print them now. You can print them with inkjet. Like,
so is it kind of like the bezel protects the overscan or whatever, or like, you know what I mean? I think I'm probably saying that wrong, but is the bezel just like a little bit of overlap of the pixels underneath, or am I thinking about this wrong? When I think of inkjet, I think of like a layer on top of the display. I'm like,
remember when I was touring the Samsung factory when they invited us to Korea for Galaxy Unpacked. I did see bezels being printed. Like, I didn't know that was inkjet printing, but I saw, I'm like, wait, that's how bezels are made?
Okay.
Yeah, the original acronym is something about, there's some kind of like drying process. So it probably is similar to printing where, you know, there's a liquid that is kind of, that is like laid out or something to create the film, and then it has to dry. And I don't, so anyway, yeah, maybe, so that, I mean, I guess you can kind of think of like how inkjet, you know, like how printing works where you have a liquid and then eventually it does dry, become more solid. So something like that, I guess.
That's okay. Cool. I had no idea either.
Yeah, it's really, yeah. And just hearing like the whole process, but yeah, I couldn't help but think of like trying to squeeze out that last Christmas cookie out of a last piece of dough. But kind of basically kind of like that idea is just to get the most out of your raw materials.
They should just make cookies out of cookies in the shape of bezels, not bezels in the shape of cookies. Although I would gladly take a cookie phone, but
we're talking about food so much. I am so hungry. But if you are hungry for an entry level, foldable, even though Samsung kind of did protest quite a bit last year, whether they would actually, produce a more affordable, lower priced phone, they might've just been, trying to keep a surprise for us because, the code names for the new generation of foldables have leaked. And there's a Q6 and B6, which, presumably are the flip and the fold. And there's a third one. There's a Q6A. And we all know that, obviously the Galaxy A series is, the more mid-rangey lineup. So what do you think? Q6A could be a cheaper fold? Is the Q fold or the B Is that what we've decided on? But anyway, just if we're looking at code names, it could be that Samsung is finally looking into adding a foldable to their A series. So I don't know.
Which is the better way for Samsung to go if they were going to have an A series of their foldables? To take the $999 device down and do the flip? Or to take the really, really expensive one and give a lower cost version of it. You know what I mean? Like, which is the better approach?
Like, really making a very affordable flippable in general, right. Or
foldable.
Or make the fold.
Because the foldable just seems so inaccessible right now, right?
Except for
us ding dongs with too much money.
I think if you get to the point where you can boast the lowest cost foldable on the market from Samsung. That's a marketing message I would run with,
sure. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think it also makes sense with, kind of like with the other foldables that we've seen that are kind of inching the price down, like the Magic V2, I guess the OnePlus, the Open is cheaper with all the trade-ins and other discounts, right? So I don't know. Inching it down little by little kind of makes sense. Something that we do kind of expect from the Z Flip 6, the upcoming, clamshell foldable will be a larger battery. So the way flips work now is that they actually have two batteries, one in each half. And it looks like the Flip 6 will have a significantly, a good bump in battery capacity. Could be looking at a total of 4,000 milliamps, which is pretty dang good for as svelte or in small and collapsible as those clamshells are. So there are your flipping and folding leaky peekies for now. Cheaper and more chargy.
For sure.
I'm so hungry. I can just think about food.
I have to admit I am too.
You're both making me hungry.
I obviously did not do a good enough job of eating before this show.
Did not.
And we had to start with Carl's Jr. I don't even like Carl's Jr. Dang that.
You like those chicken tenders, man.
I would eat it. If it was delivered on a platter to me right now, I would eat it when I'm not talking, of course, and not into the microphone. But that's not going to be right now because I'm going to tell you about HMD, which I think when I think of HMD, I think of Nokia. And apparently I won't be thinking of Nokia for much longer when I think of HMD. Because if you remember, HMD actually bought Nokia, the brand, back in 2016 from Microsoft, which bought the brand in 2013. So Nokia has been this like hot potato and it's been pretty stable for a while with HMD. But HMD has been hinting at their own hardware. And last year they actually said they had plans to release original HMD devices and phones, they said, from all new partnerships. Now HMD is teasing its hardware portfolio. That's smartphones, tablets, and wireless earbuds. And rumors say this is all going to happen at Mobile World Congress, which is just a couple of weeks away, February 26th through 29th. And what I couldn't tell out of this is, okay, so does that actually mean that they aren't going to do any more Nokia phones? Or does that mean that they're going to do some HMD and they're going to do some Nokia? Or maybe they continue to do Nokia as like a flippable thing or flip, you know, the... like the feature phone flip thing and not smartphones. I don't know.
I mean, doesn't it sound like they lost, they no longer have the exclusive licensing rights?
Oh, that's right. I did see that. You're right. There's something about losing the licensing. But I thought that they didn't lose it for another couple of years. So maybe they're ahead of
It's no longer exclusive to them. Maybe like now other companies can use.
If it's not exclusive, we should look into that. Maybe we can get our hold on the license for the show. It could be Nokia Faithful.
Oh, that's a merch opportunity. I recently bought a pin that's like a Nokia 3310 that has like the snake game on it. Yep. So, I mean, obviously I'm an idiot that bought it. So I'm sure, not that y'all are idiots. I'm an idiot.
I can imagine that the value on the Nokia brand is waning, right? Like, because of things like that. Yeah. When you're talking about like a nostalgic pin from a phone 20 years ago, what is that doing in the world today, right? So,
Well, let me tell you. Sorry, Michelle.
Okay. Even a waning Nokia brand, though, it's still far more powerful than HMD as a brand. Just got to say. So like, I this doesn't seem like good news for them.
Yeah. If you think that we should buy the branding for Nokia, go head over to patreon.com/NokiaFaithful.
URL exist. Does not exist. Please don't.
No, don't.
Now I got to set that up. No. I can't even do redirects on Patreon. Dang it, Jason.
Someone's going to start a Nokia Faithful podcast. Nobody. And we will have given them a bump.
All right. One last little rumor for us before we move on. You know, we're in that time period where the anonymous sources are swirling, right? And the latest ones out there are telling you, Michelle, and Android Authority that a new Pixel Fold 2 is on the horizon. All right. So so this nugget here is that the device might skip the Tensor G3 chipset and go right to the G4, as recent prototypes have been seen with. Could mean that the device launches later as a result. This would likely shift it to an October release with the rest of Google's hardware portfolio at the fall event. And also could be Google's first device with 16 gig RAM. But who knows? These are all anonymous sources and speculation, so we're definitely putting this in the keep an eye on file, and we'll see if anything else comes to light on this topic. So,
yeah, I would just take this report with a grain of salt. Like, who knows who that author is?
Yeah,
you know, it could be it's literal nobody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is by Michelle Rahman, so
I don't know who that is.
He's not reputable. That's all we're saying. But anyway,
I don't know who that is. Oh wait, I pushed the wrong button there.
So, but stay tuned on that. Looks like some developments happening on the Pixel Fold. So, yep. All right,
something to get excited about.
Well, speaking of Michelle, we should. We got a lot of app stuff to talk about here with QuickShare, don't we?
Right. So, Google and Samsung announced back at CES, I think, that they are rebranding Nearby Share to QuickShare, and that they are merging the two services together so that you can have them be interoperable with another. And that rebranding has started to roll out to Android devices that previously had Nearby Share. And it's kind of rolled out a bit widely now. Like, I have it on most of my devices. A lot of people have told me they've gotten it on their devices. And it's basically just a name change, a new icon, a new UI, and not really much new functionality, although there is one new thing, which we'll talk about soon. But check your Android devices. It should have already rolled out to you by now. And I think starting today, also, 9to5 Google reported that the rebranded QuickShare is also rolling out on Windows, too. So check your PC if you have that installed to see if that updated branding has appeared. But I mentioned that there's not new functionality except for one thing. So last year, Google was experimenting with putting Nearby Share targets directly into your share sheet so that when you try to share a file, you don't have to tap Nearby Share and then the device you want to share to. You could just directly select the device you want to share to from the share sheet. And they disabled that functionality like after it was rolled out for a couple of weeks, and it never came back until now, until the rebranding with the QuickShare has rolled out. They've also brought this old functionality back. So now when you go to QuickShare file, if you look at the share sheet, you'll see your QuickShare devices appear directly there. I don't think like random devices won't show up in the QuickShare list, but your own devices that you have signed into with your Google account will appear in the share sheet when you invoke it.
Nice.
And like those are some of the changes that have rolled out recently with QuickShare. And actually, there was one more thing. There was a post from a QuickShare product manager, I think, on the Samsung Korea community forums saying that I think in Q3 later this year that the Windows versions of Google's Nearby Share and Samsung Quick Share applications will be merged or integrated. They didn't really elaborate on exactly what they mean by integrated or merged. We'll probably find out. Like, hopefully it means that it doesn't matter whether or not you have the Windows version of Nearby Share or the Windows version of Samsung's Quick Share installed. They'll both be interoperable and compatible with one another.
Cool. Very nice. I never share files between my devices, so I haven't actually checked. I actually I rarely ever do. Yeah, I don't know why.
I mean, I do, but I know what I do. I'm so old school about it. Like, I'm on my Mac desktop, and I'll use Slack to just upload a file, and then Slack on my phone to download it locally. Right.
we've got our old hacks. It's really hard to undo our old hacks.
Exactly.
Because I think I do the same thing, but I haven't shared a file like on my device that would, you know, benefit from this.
I just assume this will never work.
But I do see Quick Share. I'm looking on my open.
I assume this won't work on an OS X desktop ever, right?
That's what I would like. Yeah. But
well, there's nothing technically blocking that. Like, if Google were to port the Nearby library, which is what Nearby Share or Quick Share is now based on, over to Mac OS, and then release a Quick Share client for Mac OS that you could download, then theoretically you could share files. But I don't know if Google wants to invest in the engineering, you know, effort involved in that.
Right.
Or if they're going to.
I could just use Google Drive or Slack. That's what I do.
Yep.
So, yep. All right. Cool. All right. Wait, we haven't talked about AI a lot in this episode.
We haven't.
No.
Would you like to talk about AI?
Yeah, let's do it, Lynn.
Would you like some more AI in your maps? I think generative AI is coming to maps. I think we kind of like talked about like the initial kind of rumors or feelings or whispers about this feature, but it is coming. So generative AI coming to maps. And what this will basically do is allow maps to leverage all those, you know, delicious Google LLMs to allow you to search more easily for different things, whether that is a very specific thing or very broad thing. So the example they've been giving is like, hey, you're out and about in SF and you want to go to places with a vintage vibe. That's very specific, right? But, you know, kind of with the power of LM and these models, you can ask Google Maps for that now. And not only that, not only can it kind of take, you know, this more, you know, natural language, very like specific questions, but it's also kind of incorporating things that we've seen in the past where there's like a conversational dialogue where you can ask for, hey, I want, you know, these vintage, this vintage vibe places, but then you can also follow up with like, okay, how about lunch? So there's like a lot of integrations of, you know, a lot of the Google's different AI, you know, IPs of like, you know, the generative AI with a conversational thing. And the whole point is to try to make, you know, searching easier in maps. And, you know, it also will take, you know, these results that has got, that it has provided for you, you know, using these more kind of natural language, you know, interactions and being able to, as a lot of generative AI is doing these days, is to group them into helpful categories, you know, summarizing carousels, all the like kind of photo carousels and kind of picking out like, you know, representative, you know, images, all the things that, you know, we've been seeing as like the strong points of this generation of generative AI are coming into maps. So yeah, and there's I really like the use cases that, you know, and this is all coming from a post from Google. So of course it is marketing thing to take with a grain of salt, but you know, they're really trying to emphasize, you know, the naturalness of doing this conversational flow. And for another example they give is like, if you're out and it starts to rain, you can, you know, try to leverage, you know, maps and AI to kind of quickly search for, hey, how about activities for a rainy day? And then follow that up with, you know, if, you know, questions like, hey, what about options for the kids? So, and then you'll be able to kind of take these things and then of course, share them, organize them for later. So there's a lot of, you know, this using AI to increase the, you know, efficiency of searching for information and finding information, as well as kind of, you know, being able to kind of parse that information into things that are useful to you as a human being. So this feature is specifically launching to local guides first. So local guides is a program in Google Maps where the people that, you know, all these years have been the most active in reviews and posting photos, you know, and are very active become like, you know, local guides. And they're just basically people that are known to be active on Google Maps and are participating. So basically this feature is rolling out to them first. So yeah, we'll just have to see how it shakes out. Oh, apparently we have some local guides in the chat, like Perfect Attendance Clinton Woodward is a local guide. So yeah, Clinton, if you or any other of our local guide Android faithful happen to get this, let us know if you try it and work it. But I'm actually pretty excited. This is kind of like, anyway, sorry.
I'm also a local guide.
You are.
I'm not very active, but apparently I've done enough to become one of those, and I got invited to something or whatever. So I will keep an eye on it as well, along with Clinton. But yes, I'm a local guide.
So would you use sure. Like, would you shirt for Vintage Vibe?
Sure. I love Vintage Vibes. So.
I do like this though. Yeah, so.
Now that you know you can use it like this, maybe you'll use it like this.
So exclusive.
Yep. So speaking of Google Maps and some drama going around it, we were talking recently about how assistant driving mode, a lot of chatter in the Android ether has been about how Google assistant driving mode is going away, is dying off. But Google actually clarified to 9to5 Google that assistant driving mode isn't actually dying, much like Google Assistant recently last month. It's just losing a lot of its key features, that's all. So users will lose access to the app launcher within Maps. This is set to roll out on February 7th, which is actually tomorrow at the time of this recording, so on Wednesday, February 7th. And so basically what is left is media controls. So there you go.
Okay.
So
yeah, the little media controls down at the bottom of your Maps. Great.
It's just severely hamstrung at this point. Not
I mean,
dead.
Honestly, the media controls are pretty much all I used it for.
Yeah, it's fair. Good point.
So okay. I guess that's good news.
Yep.
And it's kind of clear that Google is doing cleanup on a lot of these features were useful, but barely anyone uses. Like, they also got rid of a lot of assistant features, although I know a lot of people were kind of upset at some of the ones they removed. They also recently removed the nearby places feature in the Google Phone app.
Yep.
So you can't, like, look up a business number just by typing it in the dialer app. You now have to go to Google Search or Google Maps, which is what I'm assuming most people did, and which is what I've always done.
That drives me crazy, because I did it the other way. I would just open up the phone and start typing the name of the restaurant I was ordering takeout from, and it would give me the number, and then it stopped doing that. I got very angry. Yeah. So
yes, I love that feature.
Yep, I tried to do that. I tried to do that earlier today.
It was so convenient. And, it was so convenient.
Didn't do it. I was like,
I'm really sad.
Now I have to go over there and do the search. Woe is me.
No, but
it's
Michelle,
like a thing that Google can do. Sorry.
But you are right. It does seem like they are doing, I don't know if it's tech debt or house cleaning or laying groundwork for future things, but there is a lot going on there in Mountain View and other offices that are making stuff happen. So very curious what the end game will be. So. All right.
Yes, indeed.
So that's going to wrap up this week's news, hardware, and apps, right?
That's right. Yeah. It's feedback time.
Oh, yeah.
Feedback, baby.
My favorite time.
Contact at androidfaithful.com. Send us your emails. Like Howard. Howard was one person who sent us emails. And actually one, not multiple, just one that I'm aware of. Howard Harris says, at first I was very disappointed when the microphone on the front page search bar did not bring up the assistant. When I'm in my home and I want my phone to answer, that is how I always call up assistant. If I use the keyword, I will get three other devices answering before my phone. Don't I know it? Shortly thereafter, I remembered there was a gesture available to me. Swiping diagonally from either bottom corner will also bring it up. As long as it's been activated in the gestures setting. That works wonderfully, and everything is fine for me now. The sky is not falling anymore. Excellent, Howard.
I like a natural response to something that we're all frustrated with, but then finding the solution and moving on. Like, that is like right there, those are stages of like not so much denial, but there was anger, frustration, and then acceptance. Howard got to acceptance, which is great. So
right.
I know I just said I understand why Google's removing a lot of the other stuff for low usage, but that is one thing I actually don't understand why they removed, because you're literally, when you tap the voice icon on the search bar on the home screen, it's literally just invoking Google Assistant.
Yep.
And you can already invoke Google Assistant through various other gestures, as you know, the reader just pointed out. Like, so why remove this? It's not like they're removing Google Assistant entirely, but like, why remove this one specific shortcut? It's not like they're getting rid of any tech debt by doing that. Like, I don't actually understand.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't get that gesture to work. I've been trying to get that gesture to work since we kind of first talked about them getting rid of it. So I don't know if someone has a video. I know I'm a dev, but I also have my days too where I just can't figure stuff out. Okay. But I kind of agree with you, Michelle. Like when that bar first came out and they stuck both lens and microphone in there. I know like a lot of my dev friends were like, "Wow, that is like busy and gunked up and like crowded as heck." But at the same time, like I feel you. Like if they're removing tech debt and we're kind of cleaning things up, I just there's still a bunch of stuff in there. Like, and maybe that's not really a technical thing, but more of a UI thing. But yeah, it just feels like more of a shifting and getting ready for Gemini-ified things rather than actually like, I don't know. It's just frustrating.
They'll place a Gemini button there before you know it. And here you go. This is the open.
Okay. I'm seeing.
By the corner. Boop.
But I can't.
And then also from the other corner. Boop.
How? I'm just bringing up.
It's not enabled by default. You have to go to gesture settings to enable the swipe.
Thank you.
Up in the corner.
All right.
But it was enabled by default for me. I did not enable that as far as I know. Maybe one of the cascade of setup questions I activated.
All right.
It,
well, I'm going to try to get it working while I listen to Michelle.
Thank you, Howard, for your email.
Thank you, Howard.
All right, Michelle, you got the next one. This is from a patron.
This is from a Patreon. We had a Patreon comment from Kev. Who said, if you could pull it up quick. Thank you. As a Pixel 8 Pro owner, I wanted to comment on the thermometer sensor and app usage. Like many others, we bought a forehead thermometer during COVID, and the results are erratic, likely due to both low quality and also inconsistent measure distance. This week, I've been somewhat ill and found using the Pixel 8 Pro body temperature easy, especially after repeated use to know how to position the phone on myself to monitor the low-grade fever I had. It is also nice to be able to save the temperature history to see when it rises and declines. My kids are grown, but this would have been much better to have than the in-armpit, under-the-tongue, or other places for parents to monitor a child's temperature when they were younger that we employed. Always Android faithful, Kev.
And I wanted to highlight this because I, too, Kev, have been using the body sensor on the Pixel 8 Pro. My daughter, unfortunately, came home from school last Friday, had a little bit of a fever, and I've been tracking her temperature all through, the past 5 days, and have found it to be extremely more accurate than the 9 other thermometers I've bought from Walgreens and CVS over the years that all give various different kind of results. Yes, it's a pain in the butt to like hold the phone directly in the kid's face while they're watching TV and like you're covering their eyes. And also like the motion of like you hold it in front of the face and then you move the phone to the temple, on a 5-year-old, that's a small distance. So I got to move really slowly to get a good reading. But I have found it to be immensely accurate. And I compared it to the thermometer at the pediatrician's office while I was there. I'm like, okay, you do it. Now I'm going to do it. I want to see what the temperature is. And they were nearly identical. So, I'm very happy with this temperature thing, by the way. I know it's an odd thing for me to be waving the flag for, but I love it. I think it's great. So,
Will you be sad if the 9 doesn't have it?
No, I don't know. Maybe. I'm becoming
I guess the more you use it.
Yeah, the more I use it, I'll be sad if they remove Assistant from it. But I like Kev, like keeping it keeps track over 7 days of the temperature, which is great. Yeah. It is kind of annoying in that every time you do it, you have to set the age of the person you're doing it for. I would like to have some presets. Like I could see how this could grow to be much more useful. But I'm all in on it. So it's very cool.
Nice. Thank you, Kev. Thanks for your support and the Patreon too. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and our last email from this week is from often feedback writer Ian Hall. And I want to say he was like an email of the week recipient formerly? Probably. Yes. But Ian Hall is writing to us again to give us yet another app suggestion. Just wanted to let you know of an app I use multiple times a day, but have never heard anyone mention. But I've never heard anyone mention it. Firefox Focus, as the name suggests, is from the Firefox team. And also, as expected, it's a browser. But it's a simple one, which you can open, search for something, browse the web, and close it, at which point all cookies, history, passwords, etc. are deleted. The added bonus is that it blocks trackers, etc. Super useful when you want to search for something and then don't want Google to get all excited and push articles about it to you forevermore. For example, if I'm looking for hotels, etc., in a town I plan to visit, I don't need news stories from that town in my Google Discover feed for the next 2 weeks. Amen. I find the app really useful, and I'm sure others will too. Love the show. Ian Hall, Wantage UK. And yeah, Firefox Focus, the no fuss browser.
I will plus one this recommendation. I have Firefox Focus installed on my phone, and I use this in lieu of incognito mode on Chrome. Although it's not enough to make it my default browser. I don't know why, but there it is.
Firefox Focus. Love it. Great suggestion, Ian. Thank you.
Right on.
Good stuff. And there we go. We have reached the end. Yay.
Woo.
Who's doing the outro? Is that me? I can't even remember at this point.
There is no name on the dock, so throw the ball up in the air and see who catches it, Jason. Why don't you go?
Fine. You know, it's fine. I can take the outro. We appreciate all of you so very much for your support and for hanging with us and, supporting us on Patreon, downloading the podcast, telling your friends. It all helps. So thank you so much to everyone who watches and listens to this show, Android Faithful, each and every week. Also, big thanks to our guest earlier. Just one more time, really want to thank Shihao Kung from Asus for spending some time with us talking about gaming phones and everything that they have going on at Asus. Michelle, why don't we start with you? What do you want to let people know about?
You can follow me on Twix, Mastodon, Threads, Reddit, everywhere at Michal Rahman, and also support my work at patreon.com/MichalRahman. And if you'd like to support me, now would be a great time because we are on the cusp of Android 15. And I'll be really, really busy diving into all the developer previews and the betas that are coming. And that takes a lot of work. So if you want to see what Google is cooking up for the next release of Android, please follow me and or support my work.
There you go. Patreon.com/MichalRahman. Thank you, Michal, for 3/4 of today's rundown. We appreciate it. Even the interview. You even set up the interview, dude.
Busy week.
Yes, very busy. Wynn, what about you?
Yeah, I'm an Android dev. I sometimes speak about Android developer things, and you can find my talks, associated video and code at my website, randomlytyping.com. And if you see a queen code monkey out on the interweb, that's probably me. I'm most active on Instagram, but yeah, give me a follow. And that's it.
Yay. randomlytyping.com. Thank you, Wynn. And Ron, what do you want to leave people with?
You can just follow me at RonXO across all the different social media stuff and just keep doing what you're doing. Write in those emails to us. Go support on Patreon. Post on social. If you have a friend who's into Android, tell them about the show. Pass along the link. Definitely we want to grow that audience, and you guys are our best evangelists. So please, if you're going to spread the word about anything, spread the word about Android Faithful and tell your friends. So thank you.
Tell your friends. Yep. And thank you so very much, everybody. As for me, just go to yellowgoldstudios.com. Sure, that'll take you actually to the YouTube channel that I'm working on right now. But right now, you can find episodes of AI Inside there. That's my podcast about artificial intelligence with Jeff Jarvis. Or go to AIinside.show, and that'll take you to all the episodes that we have so far, and we have more planned.
Loving the show, Jason. You and Jeff are doing great.
Thanks.
Good work. Keep it up.
Having a good time trying to fill out the booking. You know how challenging booking an interview show can be, and so I'm trying to get ahead. So that's taken some work, but we'll get there. Yep. You know, it's the beginning stages. We get there. As for this show, we already got there. That's right, because we're here in your ears and you're listening to it right now. AndroidFaithful.com. You've already subscribed, right? And if you haven't, you should. Maybe you've supported us on Patreon, right? And if you haven't, why not? Patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. Follow us on all the socials. Just look for Android Faithful or Android Faithful Podcast. You will probably find us. And then, of course, you can always contact us, contact@AndroidFaithful.com, to be part of the show in our feedback section and tell us what you think. If you got some suggestions, all that stuff, let us know. Thank you so much for being a part of Android with us each and every week. We love you, and we'll see you next Tuesday on Android Faithful. Yeah. Thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.